kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is the Empowerment Hour. I can promise you, wherever you are in the world, and we're heard in 166 countries and growing, that you're going to learn new things that can allow you to live a longer and healthier life. We're going to talk about why physicians, 75%, refuse chemotherapy themselves. If you have bad constipation and it's chronic, we're going to give you a remedy. Before you eat that next piece of pizza or bagel or piece of toast, some new research shows you what's wrong with that. If you have a problem with your prostate, a lot of men do, good news to help you. And how fruits and vegetables impact your skin, make it healthier, plus a lot more on health and healing. Then a more in-depth classroom on the air, where you're going to get a lot of insight into the cancer industry. I wrote my first article on the politics of cancer in 1975, and there have been no major national publications on the politics of cancer prior to that article. There was one in New York Magazine, but this is the one that really ripped the lid off the cancer establishment. It won the Audi Award. Robert Houston, Gene Houston's brother, and myself worked on that. And that began a long journey into looking at cancer. Up to that point, it was a sacred cow. You never talked anything critical of cancer. Well, we've learned with tens of millions of people dying needlessly from cancer when they could have had a chance of living, what's wrong? So today from Health Impact News, we're going to give you John P. Thomas. We're going to give you a lot of brand new information that I believe could save your life. If time permits today, the expanding world of poverty capitalism from the New York Times, Thomas Edsall. And it's a good article. I think he's made very valid points, but I want to go beyond it and give you a commentary of my own of what we can do to help people who are suffering. Now, you may think you have nothing to hide, but you're still breaking laws which government spying could discover and use against you. That's why when the government says that they can read every email, listen in on every phone call, and they do, capture key statements out of those phone calls. Look at what you've been watching on the internet. Catalog it to use against you. And we're not protesting it. We should be. I'll explain. Also, five reasons that you should never trust without challenge the news. From a reporter, Robert Evans from MTM. Interesting. When I share these with you, then I will invite you to call in and share your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your ideas. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Also, many people travel and hence are not near a computer or a land-based station where they can hear the program. Please write down this number because whenever this comes on, you can always, if nothing else is available, you can listen over the telephone. And this is particularly true for people who are older and may not be used to the internet, not know how to use iTunes or any of the other podcasts that you can get us on. Write down this phone number, 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. Recently, when there was a fundraiser, and I was on the road, and I was preempted for 2 days on one of our sister stations to carry this program. We had 6,000 people listen over the telephone from just that station that would otherwise be listening to me on the station. By the way, talking about stations, I'm from West Virginia, and I want to say thank you to WYAP and Clay for carrying the program. And up in Maine, in Northampton, a very progressive station, WXOJ, and from Olympia, Washington, KOWA, and Gallup, New Mexico, KGLP, Florence, Oregon, KXCR, Champaign, Illinois, WEFT, Sarasota, Florida, WSLR, East Tennessee, the Detour, and Tampa, Florida, WNNF. You know, we have stations all across America. That's just all I have time for, but I want to thank you for taking the time and interest to air this program. Let's begin. 95% to 100% of all physicians will recommend chemotherapy and radiation as post-operative and surgery I absolutely support for cancer. But I do not support chemotherapy or radiation for most cancers. And that's because, as a scientist, as a public health scientist, as a PhD in public health and human nutrition, and having worked in the labs for decades, I'm used to looking for science-based information and proof. Well, I couldn't find it for the vast majority of post-surgical therapies, meaning radiation and chemotherapy. To the contrary, what I found repeatedly was that whatever gain a person had in the short term, cancer disappeared, person thought, good, I'm in remission, there was a subsequent reintroduction of that cancer in the person's body, and they might try again, but then the person normally died. Interesting, then, with upwards of 100% of physicians recommending this therapy, wouldn't you imagine they'd use it themselves? This is just from the latest study on this, from several different publications. Quote, 75% of physicians refuse chemotherapy themselves. Now, the great lack of trust is evident even amongst doctors. Polls and questionnaires show that 3 doctors out of 4 would refuse any chemotherapy because of its ineffectiveness against the disease and its devastating effects on the entire human organism. That is why many doctors and scientists have to say about chemotherapy. This is one, quote, the majority of the cancer patients in this country die because of chemotherapy, which does not cure breast, colon, and lung cancer. This has been documented for over a decade, and nevertheless, doctors still utilize chemotherapy to fight these tumors. That's from Dr. Alan Levin at the University of California, San Francisco. Quote, if I were to contract cancer, I would never turn to a certain standard for the therapy of the disease. Cancer patients who stay away from these centers have some chance to make it. Professor George Mathey in Scientific Medicine Stymied. From Dr. Hardin Jones. Dr. Hardin Jones' lecture at the University of California, after analyzing many decades of statistics on cancer survival, has come to this conclusion. Quote, when not treated, the patients do not get worse, or they even get better. The unsettling conclusions have never been refuted. From The Lancet, the British Medical Journal, and from Dr. Albert Braverman, MD, Medical Oncology in the 1990s, volume 337, page 901, quote, many oncologists recommend chemotherapy for almost any type of cancer with a faith that is unshaken by almost constant failures. From Edward G. Griffin, quote, our most efficacious regimens are loaded with risks, side effects, and practical problems. And after all the patients we have studied and who have been treated and have paid a toll, only a minuscule percentage of them is paid off with a period of tumoral regression and generally a partial one. I'll give you just one more. After all, quote, and for the overwhelming majority of the cases, there is no proof whatsoever that chemotherapy prolongs survival expectations, and this is the great lie about this therapy. There is a correlation between the reduction of cancer and the extension of life of the patient. They simply do not have the statistics to support that. And by the way, I had a chance to interview a Dr. Erlich Abel, a very famous German epidemiologist at the Heidelberg Mannheim Tumor Clinic. And he exhaustively analyzed and reviewed all of the main studies, over 3,000 clinical studies and experiments on chemotherapy. Abel discovered that the comprehensive world rate of positive outcomes because of chemotherapy was frightening because simply nowhere was scientific evidence available demonstrating the chemotherapy is able to, quote, prolong in any appreciative way the life of patients affected by the most common types of organ cancer: lung, brain, stomach, colorectal, pancreas, and prostate and breast. Abel highlights that rarely can chemotherapy improve the quality of life, and he describes it as a scientific squalor while maintaining that at least 80% of all cancers do not respond positively to chemotherapy. So, again, what is the purpose of this? If almost 100% of doctors recommend chemotherapy, but they themselves wouldn't use it. Now, separately, we are a nation that is constipated, and for several reasons. Lack of water, which also helps your skin and your immune system and helps relieve pain in the body, especially back pain, but also because so much of our diet has low, non-quality fiber. Meat, for example, and cheese and dairy has no fiber at all and can be very constipating, especially fat. The more fat you have in the diet, the more constipated you're going to be, and the greater risk of colorectal cancer or polyps or precancerous lesions for a simple reason. Any form of saturated fat slows down peristalsis. That's the wave-like rhythmic movement of food going through the intestine. And just visualize that you're eating a high plant-based diet. Lots of grains, nuts, and seeds, and legumes, and starchy vegetables. I'm from the South. We love rutabaga down there, and yams, and sweet potatoes, and parsnips, and turnips. Don't see a lot of that in a lot of places, but it's all good for you. In fact, I got a call once. It was about 10 o'clock at night, and this voice says, "This is Gary Noll." I said, "Yes, this is Gary Noll." "Gary, this is Barry Farber. And I understand that you like rutabaga." I said, "I like rutabaga." "Well, come on down WOR, because I'm doing an overnight show, and let's talk about rutabaga." Well, that began a friendship. That was in 1972 on WOR, where he held fourth overnight, and that was the number one radio show in America at that time, radio station in America. John Gamling was in the morning, he was the overnight. And Patricia McCann, who's the McCann family, were the longest-running family on radio. She was starting to take the mic for the next 20 years till she retired. By the way, just as an aside for those of you who live in New York, Patricia McCann looks phenomenal, is totally healthy. I even invited her to have a radio program on PRN, but she said no, she's happy doing all the work she's doing now. And every day I see her go in the health food store because I'm up there getting my juices, and there she's getting her juices. So for any of the McCann listeners, she is as healthy as can be, as is Barry Farber, who has become a vegetarian and exercises and is still on radio. We talked about rutabagas and other southern fruits that were healthy all night long. So if you're one of those people who do not get your fiber and hence have good digestion, and the basic rule is this: for every meal that you eat, within a couple of hours, you should also be vacating the previous sediment from the last meal. Now, what comes out of the body is undigested fibers, what are called oligocelluloses, dead cells from the intestine, which has a high cell turnover, and bacteria. Now, if you're eating good food, you have good bacteria, and good bacteria promote good a good symbiosis, what we call homeostasis of the gut, a good balance. And in all the cultures around the world, the Japanese culture, the Chinese culture, the Scandinavian culture, you'll see fermented foods. And those ferments, like in Germany, it's sauerkraut, but in kefir, those ferments create good bacteria, hence the probiotics. We need billions of those each day. But when you're having sugar and alcohol and refined carbohydrates, you create yeast and bad bacteria, and hence bad breath, smelly bodies, smelly sweat. And when you clean your body up and you start taking some fresh vegetables and juices and berries, and then everything becomes healthier. So if you want another way of relieving your constipation, according to the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, acupuncture. This is from Medical News Today. Nearly 1 in 6 adults worldwide suffers from chronic constipation. And acupuncture was able to involve stimulating targeted points on the outer ear, and that helps the body stimulate the intestines and get it moving. It becomes the traffic cop that gets the traffic rolling again. Now, I mentioned at the beginning one of the reasons why you should pay attention to the type of food you put in your body as well as how it's processed. And the more you eat a browned food, brown such as in baked goods, cakes, toast, bagels, pizza crust, the more acrylamides you get in the body. That's a byproduct of that heating. This is from the Hebei United University in China. Quote, "The blood-brain barrier prevents xenobiotics from entering the central nervous system. Growing evidence indicates that neurotoxins, that means toxic to your brain, may disrupt the function of your blood-brain barrier and blood-cerebrospinal fluid barriers." And this talks about how acrylamides, those are your brown products, do exactly that. So, this was published in Neuroregenerative Research. So it just means this. Here's the takeaway message in lay language. No one's going to die by having an occasional item that is not as healthy as you ideally should be. And I don't believe that we should have a nation that beats up on itself if it strays. You have to accept that. That's just being part of human. And I always tell the people I counsel, if you feel that you cannot make a strong change in your diet, then you tell me your disposition and I'll help you make a transitional diet. And that means if you can't give everything bad up at once, how about giving one bad thing per week up? That's doable, right? So this week you give up bacon. Next week you give up, hot dogs. The week after you give up hamburgers. Now, if you want and like the taste, the mouthfeel, and the fullness of eating one of those, fine. We'll get you a vegan hot dog and a vegan veggie burger that are delicious, but they're also healing. They're anti-inflammatory. So at least you don't feel that you have a total loss of something. Other people, hey, I know people that they'll give it all up. That's it. They never look back. But most people, you have to do it in pieces. But as long as they keep going forward, it's good. And if they should go to a party or eat out and they have something they shouldn't have, okay, here's what I do. I call it a recovery day, meaning the day after you've done something, eaten something, drank something you shouldn't have, what you do is simple. You start the day with a really good bitters tonic. The bitters can help clean up the liver, clean up the kidneys, clean up the bloodstream, improve your digestion, and I've given it to a lot of friends of mine because not a single friend I have is healthy. Not one. I can't think of one. No, I don't have any healthy friends. And that's because they choose not to be. They eat what they want to eat, and we have a basic rule with all of our friendships. Don't talk about health. If I'm making the choices I'm making, it's because I want to. It's not because I'm stupid. Okay, I respect that. And so that we don't share. So when we go to dinner, I'll eat something that's healthy. They'll eat whatever they want. And that's never a point of discussion. It's the friendship that counts. And you can't expect with a lot of people to be in alignment on everything. In life, I figure if you're in alignment with 50% of the things that you both have in common, you've got enormous potential for a great relationship. I've never seen where everything is syncopatic. So what I do is this. Someone says, "Ah, man, I shouldn't eat that. I shouldn't drink that." What can I do? You start off with 16 ounces of celery juice, to which you add watercress, like a bunch, and you juice it. Italian parsley, the juice of 2 lemons, 1 lime, 1 grapefruit, some vitamin C, and some chia seeds. Now, not a lot of cheese, about a tablespoon of chia seeds. So you make you juice it, then you blend in the chia seeds, and you drink it down over an hour or so. That'll help cleanse, purge, and rebalance. All right? Now, for those of you who have prostate problems, or for those of you who do not want to have prostate problems, brand new research out of the University of Bristol in the United Kingdom and published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention showed that tomatoes in the diet are extremely beneficial for the prostate. Quote, "Men who eat over 10 portions of a tomato per week have an 18% lower risk of developing prostate cancer." And so that's terrific, because 10 portions, a portion small, it's like a small tomato. So if you were to simply take a glass of tomato juice, you're getting at least 4 tomatoes in a tomato juice right there. So if you had 2 tomato juices a week, you've more than met those 10 portions. Or if you have a nice tomato sauce. Most people put tomato sauces on pasta. I put it on brown rice. I put tomato sauce in baked potatoes. Now, baked potatoes is one of the most perfect foods. You just, to really do it right, you want to get an organic potato, wash it thoroughly and scrub the skin, and then cut it. Cut like an inch in across the top and on both sides and the bottom. Why do you do that? Because when it's baking, if you don't do that, it'll bake into the center, but all the moisture then goes to the center, and then you open it up and it becomes kind of hard and wet on the inside, though it could be fine on the outside near the skin. So this way the whole tomato dissipates water evenly, so you get a perfectly baked potato. And because you're using coconut oil on the skin or macadamia nut oil, it doesn't burn the skin. Hence, it protects it. It's like putting a really strong sunscreen and you're out in the sun. So it's protecting it. Hence, the skin is still edible. So you'll get this phenomena. If you don't do that, you can get a very crisp potato skin, which is not good because there you're back to your acrylamides. But if you use coconut oil in kind of massaging the whole potato in that, then it, in fact, even when baking potato, about every 15 minutes, I'll baste the potato again with a little basting brush. Now, the key is don't put the temperature up high. Most people turn it right up to bake or 450 degrees. Not a good idea. Instead, keep it at 350 degrees. It takes a little longer, but it's a much healthier potato, and it cooks fully, perfectly. And then you open up your potato, and you smash it all up. Then separately, you've sautéed some sweet onions till they're translucent, some very thinly sliced garlic, and most people get garlic that's too thick. Garlic should be, remember there's a scene in The Goodfellas where the guy was in prison, and he slices the garlic with a razor blade? That's how garlic should be sliced. And that way you can use very low heat, never high heat with garlic, or onions. And onions are one of the best sources of quercetin. And just so it's golden, never brown, never black, and at a low temperature. Then you take whole tomatoes, and best way of dealing with this is You dip the whole tomato in hot water, take it right back out again, just takes a minute, and then you peel off the skin, then dice up that tomato and put it in. Then I yet like to use, for a good tomato sauce, I'll use like a teaspoon of anise and a teaspoon of fennel, a little bit of cayenne pepper, some Himalayan sea salt, and black pepper, which is very healing. And each sauce you can add different herbs and spices and or cumin, and then you slowly stir that. And if it's not quite thick enough, you can put a little bit of tomato juice in it. And then when your potato is ready, you first put olive oil into your potato, raw organic virgin olive oil. Best would be Greek oil, and it should be green, a greenish color. It should never be clear. If it's clear, you're getting one of about 80% of the Italian olive oils that's exported is done so by the organized crime there that control the whole thing. And they break that with peanut oil, they'll break it with soy oil, but are charging you for extra virgin olive oil. Make sure it's organic, certified organic olive oil, and that it's a darker color in a darker bottle. Always refrigerate any oil if you're going to keep it for longer than, let's say, 3 weeks, because light and oxygen oxidize the fatty acids and can turn it rancid. That's also true for sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and chia seeds. Keep them in an airtight container in the refrigerator. And let's say that you want to use olive oil today. You put it in the refrigerator yesterday. It's going to become non-opaque, meaning it's going to solidify. Fine. Take it out at night. When you get up in the morning, your olive oil is oil again. Once you use it, you put it back in the refrigerator. You can sustain your olive oil for a year that way. Otherwise, most people are using bad olive oil. By the way, anything in your freezer, like rice stream type of ice creams or non-dairy ice creams, use them within 3 months. Some people, they probably had it for 35 years in there. So don't keep everything in the freezer indefinitely, especially don't keep dairy. You've got bacteria that are going to be growing. Even though it's at freezing, it can grow. Remember, bacteria can grow 2 miles deep in frozen ice into Antarctica. Some bacteria can grow in a volcano. So we have a lot of myths in our society, including freezing kills all bacteria. It does not. What freezing will kill are mealybugs. The bugs that come generally in the summer, they'll start to have larvae that allows the development of the bug. Never throw those away. They're going to be in all crops. You can't get rid of them. What you can do is when you go to cook your grain, millet, quinoa, amaranth, spelt, brown rice, just rinse it. And then when you put your grain in the water, they're so lightweight, they'll come to the surface. Then just scoop them off. I've seen people throw away all their grains. That's just foolish. Don't. Anyhow, so that's how you get your tomato sauce. Delicious, healthy, nutritious. That sauce I just gave you will help lower your blood pressure, help kills viruses from the throat and the intestine, helps kill bacteria that are bad in your intestine and your stomach, helps also maintain a better blood sugar level, and especially good for people with high blood pressure. And it is anti-carcinogenic. There's a lot of anti-cancer agents. The onion anti-cancer, tomato anti-cancer, the garlic anti-cancer, and the potato is rich in alpha-lipoic acid, calcium, magnesium, and protein. Yeah, you get good protein from a potato. So that goes along with this article from there. And finally, eat fruits and vegetables for skin with sun-kissed glow. This is from Mainstream Science. This is from Science Daily and published in the Quarterly Journal of Experimental Psychology. Quote, forget sunbeds, sunbathing, or faked tanning lotions. The secret to a sexy, healthy glow lies in eating your 5-a-day vegetables and fruits. And this was just based upon the more fruits and vegetables you have, the better skin color you have. So, they talk about what's in the carotenoid factor that impacts the quality of our skin. And the more reds and yellow pigments that are in fruit, the brighter the fruit, increase skin quality. Well, I'm recommending 11 servings of fruits and vegetables a day or more, because it's nature's DNA life extenders. So more juicing, more fruit snacks, vegetable snacks, the better. Now, we're halfway through our program. That's our health nutrition segment. And I want to get to a few things before I go to the cancer one. This is something I thought was interesting. This is from a reporter, Robert Evans. And here's what he says. Quote, growing up, I remember wondering why major catastrophes were relegated to just inches of a column space somewhere in the middle of a newspaper, while knocked up celebrities having bad gas were right on front page. Then I started working as the editor of a tech news site at the dawn of civilization reporting, social media, and the web, and realized that the gulf between newsworthy and the filler has been widened on an enormous scale. Here are just some of the reasons journalism has gone and continues to go to hell. One, money is in the public relations. You can spot a press source news article miles away. A cheap and easy way to push coverage into a publication is to commission a survey. You know, the type that says, quote, new study shows women most attracted to morbidly obese men. Well, the great thing about them is that they're a cinch to game until you get the result you want. That hypothetical example was probably funded by whoever and then given to the press so that they could pick out the key talking points without going into any detail about how they arrived there. You'll usually find the source in the last paragraph of it all. The same story wound up in my mailbox from Sky News, and to be fair, we all got the email at the same time. And by the way, I'll add this on to it. Have you ever noticed that virtually on all the networks, in all the news media, they'll tell the same identical story in the same identical way, using the same identical words? That's because no one actually went out and discovered the story. It was given to them. And frequently the people who give it to the news media are not PR firms directly. No, that's too obvious. They have to have plausible deniability that they're biased or lazy and not doing their work. Instead, they come from scientific-sounding or consumer-sounding organizations that are front groups for corporations or think tanks that are all affiliated with some form of funding from either the right or left or major people. And that's why you never hear them attacking chemotherapy as being useless or statin drugs as useless or anything and everything in psychiatry being a fraud. I call it psychofraud. The only part of psychiatry that I agree with is that which extols the value of the conversation between the doctor and the patient, where the doctor is trying to help a person in resolving the problems at the emotional level. I do not support the psychopharmacological approach. Walk in, what's your problem? 2 minutes later, here's your diagnosis and here's your prescription for this drug. It hasn't worked, it doesn't work. But we have an awful lot of drug people around the country now. And you never hear any of the media take him on, because any journalist could do the work that we do. We break more original, in-depth investigative reporting stories than any other radio program on radio in America. We're just doing one this coming week. Next week, you'll hear me do an in-depth one on sugar. And it's all fully referenced. It's been vetted by scholars and residents. And the media won't touch that, because they got to think about how many sponsors would pull ads that have sugar in them. You don't want to lose that revenue. How many sponsors would pull their drug ads? That's the bloodline of media. So he's right. PR disguised as news. I mean, today, for example, One was Brad Pitt's wedding. Who cares? It's his life and her life. Fine, so they married. So what? You know, that's front page news. And on another was the comedian who had a medical procedure and ended up in a hospital. Joan Rivers. Again, so what? They're far more important stories. It shows you how dumbed down and how irrelevant our news is. Then number two, think tanks invent credible sounding BS. Quote, your typical think tank has a long, impressive sounding and dull name that's hard or tedious to argue with. Something like the Center for Expert Economic Excellence, a title that manages to convey trustworthiness and absolutely no other relevant information. Put credulity, think tanks are a way to push an agenda into public discourse, often representing some specific business or political interest. Think tanks are officially independent, which only means that the shady figure in the trench coat waits until you're out of the room to hand over the comically large bag of money to the think tank. The first time I really looked into these think tanks was after hearing a radio report that said that the UK should sell off its best welfare housing at a time when there's a severe housing crisis and government-imposed austerity. They proposed that selling public housing would help matters, and what do you do? The trustees of the Policy Exchange are major conservative donors. Trustee Theodore Agnew was given £144,000 to the Conservative Party, and George Robinson, another trustee, donated £389,000. And suddenly, they're the experts on the air telling you why. We're not biased. We should be selling public housing. It'll help. This happens in your country, the United States. There's a man named Richard Berman. He's a former executive of Steak and Ale and currently does PR for much of the restaurant industry. He also owns the Employment Policies Institute, a think tank, gee whiz, found evidence that raising the minimum wage was bad. Salam.com found that 83% of news stories that cited the Employment Policies Institute failed to mention that it was owned by an advocate for Big Hamburger. A journalist used to be able to keep up with the PR guys. In the past, there was closer to a one-to-one ratio of reporters to industry shills. Now, there's four public relations agents for every reporter. By the way, add, why don't you, about 100 lobbyists for every reporter. Just to give you an idea, we do an in-depth, original investigative report on the dangers of radiation and why nuclear power plants should all be closed and what the accidents they have happened, how it's been spun, and all of ours are fact-checked and accurate. The very next day, pro-nuclear industry politicians come forward and say, we need more nuclear power plants. They're all safe. And we've never had a major accident. No one's ever died. And yet we showed all the people who have died and showed the accidents. But they're the ones who get onto the front page. They're the ones who have the experts. And behind them are people from the nuclear industry giving campaign contributions. It's true about everything. You name the issue, I'll show you the money. Follow the money behind every single piece of legislation. Obamacare, written by the insurance industry, benefits the insurance industry. If it happens on some level to give people coverage, no one ever questions the quality of the coverage. If you're getting covered for cancer therapy, are you aware of how little efficacy and safety there is in the therapy? So the fact that you're having someone pay the bill so you can die from it should be of concern. It is not. That's how superficially we think. Next, no one checks facts anymore. Newspaper are content farms. They have to be. The admins' money reactions only poke through their gilded loincloths when they're leering at spreadsheets full of cold, hard traffic statistics. Even respected outlets like The Guardian and The New York Times have to give the occasional hat tip to whatever's going to replace planking text. We're just lucky it didn't come in the form of a 9,000-entry slideshow. There are legitimate attempts to maintain a certain standard, but with the unrelenting 24-hour rolling news cycle, We've all grown accustomed to every update to the most mundane story spawns a new article to hit Google's CEO G-spot. With that much noise out there, it's not all that surprising that running post-publication corrections is easier than fact-checking. He's right. I remember when I was doing a series of articles on the politics of cancer, and the publisher said, we're going to get attacked. They hired a medical doctor, an Orthodox medical doctor, who was also a research professor, to go over every single fact. We were never sued. We never had to correct a single line in 58 cover stories that I did because of fact-checking. You could drive a truck through 80% of all the articles you read each day in the New York Times for their lack of bias. For example, the Ukraine. We were behind the Ukraine, the coup there. We're behind getting genetically modified foods from Monsanto into the Ukraine, though before the revolution, there was no GMOs allowed. Look at Libya. Look at Iraq. Look at the fraud that has gone on. And when do they actually accuse the people responsible for it? And also, university press offices spread spicily the crap. There are well-publicized problems with science reporting. And then it goes into how so much of what comes out of universities is self-serving, and no one ever follows up to see that it wasn't real. Let me give an example of that. Think how many times we've heard of about amazing new potential cures for AIDS and treatments for AIDS to prevent AIDS. Every single one has failed. Yet no one says, we keep printing wrong information. We never then challenge the credibility of these people. And also, lastly, and most importantly to me, respected journalists are often just shills. You bet. And we see that all the time. I'm Gary Noll. We're here in New York talking about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And I'm going to share some insights on the cancer industry. And then our phone number to call in for your thoughts are 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This is the latest. This is a personal story from John Thomas. He says, the surgeon pointed his pen at a large tumor on the CAT scan and began to explain the procedure for removing the colon cancer. He then paused for a moment and said to his wife, this isn't your biggest problem. He then began to tap his pen on three small points that were visible on the image of her liver. These are much bigger problems because we can't remove them with surgery. Everyone we met at the University Medical Center was compassionate and concerned for us. After the surgery, we met with the oncologist. He explained the chemotherapy option. He told my wife, quote, you have 6 months to 1 year to live if you do chemotherapy. If you don't do chemotherapy, then you have 6 months to 1 year to live. The only positive reason that he could give for doing the chemotherapy was that if by chance she was in a group that had only 6 months to live, then it might extend her life a few more months. We asked about alternative treatments, and he indicated that none of them have proven beneficial. My wife opted to not do chemotherapy because she didn't want to suffer the side effects of the drugs. Many things were different in 1995 than they are today. At that time, we did not have easy access to information about alternative cancer treatments. We did learn about a few alternatives and tried some of them, but the cancer kept growing. My wife refused to consider any alternative that would require her to make major lifestyle changes. She was willing to try therapies as long as she could keep working and could continue eating the standard American diabetic diet, which was high in carbohydrates, sugar, and she only became willing to consider any alternative treatments when she was within a couple weeks of death. She lived for exactly 1 year from the time of her diagnosis. In the 2010 documentary entitled Cut, Poison, Burn, filmmaker Wayne Chesler presents powerful facts about corruption in the business of conventional cancer treatment in the United States. Consider these seven comments that were taken from the documentary. which show that America is far from winning the war against cancer. Quote, from 1920 to the present time, we have made little progress in the treatment of adult cancers. So a person who gets prostate cancer or breast cancer today will live as long as a person who got it in 1920. Who is that? Dr. Charles B. Simon, M.D., founder of Simon Protective Cancer Center. Quote, we are people, why people are terrified when they hear the word cancer, because they know if conventional cancer treatment doesn't work, by Dr. Julian Whitaker. Quote, everyone should know that most cancer research is largely a fraud, Dr. Linus Pauling. In a patient that was designed to steal Dr. Brzezinski's cancer cure, the United States government stated, quote, current approaches to combat cancer rely primarily on the use of chemical and radiation, which are themselves carcinogenic and may promote recurrences in the development of metastatic disease, end quote. The U.S. government admits that conventional treatments cause cancer. Patent number 5605930, compositions and methods for treating and preventing pathologies, including cancer. The American Cancer Society is more interested in accumulating wealth than saving lives. Quote, Breast Cancer Awareness Month was actually initiated by the companies that make tamoxifen. The devices for mammograms are made by General Electric, and General Electric is in a relationship with the people behind Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So there's a huge industry that is invested in breast cancer. Although the goal was noble, to me it is obscene that these companies are using the symbol of the pink ribbon for commercial purposes only. Very few dollars ever make it to really help women. Dr. Cheryl Selman. Quote, I find it interesting that we have all these walks for the cure for cancer. We got all the risk factors. We got all the donations. We are going to find a cure this decade. All this money keeps pouring in and it all goes to the same guys. How can this be? Where have all those billions of research dollars gone? Where's the fruit from the war on cancer that began in 1971? Are we really much safer from the ravages of cancer today than we were in the past? The research dollars have all been devoured by a cancer monopoly, a cartel consisting of pharmaceutical companies, the American Medical Association, the research system that supports pharmaceutical manufacturers, a system of charities that raise money for cancer research, and various federal agencies such as the US FDA. These groups have little interest in curing cancer, but are fully committed to earning profits for the cancer monopoly that is headed by the pharmaceutical companies. There's considerable talk these days in the media and among researchers who conduct research for the pharmaceutical industry that is intended to convince us that the cause of cancer is genetic abnormalities. The belief in a genetic cause for cancer serves the drug companies very well. They want us to believe that the cure for cancer will need to be based upon genetics, and individualized drugs will need to be developed to match each person's genetic profile and their specific type of cancer. The vast excitement about genetics on the part of the drug companies and the conventional medical system is based on the fact that conventional medical treatments are unable to cure most cancers. This is a fact they will not admit. They want us to stop asking the question, why has the 40-year war on cancer failed to produce any results? They want us to stop asking where only 3 approved treatments for cancer, surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, and why are no new cancer therapies approved by the USDA in the last 100 years? They want us to have hope for a brighter day in cancer treatment while our friends and family die by the thousands every day. Dr. Thomas Seyfried addresses the metabolic nature of cancer. He is a nationally known researcher in genetics and biochemistry. His research program focuses on gene-environment interactions related to complex diseases like epilepsy, autism, brain cancer, and neurodegenerative diseases. Dr. Seyfried investigates many of these diseases from the perspective of genetics and energy metabolism. Much of his work has also been to direct translational benefits to the clinic for the treating of cancer with the use of restricted ketogenic diet. And his research shows us once again that drug companies are on the wrong track when it comes to curing cancer. The current path of drug company research will not lead to a cure for cancer, but will perpetrate their multi-billion dollar business model, which earns profits on the basis of withholding curative cancer treatments from the healthcare system. Here are a few of his findings, Dr. Seyfried's findings. No real progress has been made in the management of advanced or metastatic cancer for more than 40 years. The number of people dying each year and day has changed little in the past 10 years. Most of the conceptual advances made in understanding the mechanisms of cancer have more to do with non-metastatic tumors than with metastasized tumors. Many cancers are discovered after they metastasize and have already spread to other locations of the body. Most cancer, regardless of cell or tissue origin, is a similar disease of respiratory insufficiency coupled with compensatory fermentation. Some factors that can cause respiratory insufficiency and cancer include age, viral infections, hypoxia, inflammation, radiation, and carcinogens. So, in other words, the cure for cancer is obtained by starving cancer cells so that they will die while feeding the rest of the body so it can grow stronger and use its natural immune system to resist cancer. So, on my next program, I'm going to go into the cancer industry and how it operates, how it works, so that you can get a good idea of why we have not won the war on cancer. But I wanted to set time aside near the end of our show to have you have a chance to call in and share your perspective. Now let's go to Tony in New Jersey. Hi, Tony. Your turn. You're on the air.
Hello, Gary. I was just noticing that the water levels in toilets everywhere I go is getting lower and lower. And I was wondering, is that also an indication of our water level? You know, you always talk about drought. I'm in New Jersey. I'm not over there, but we should be concerned, shouldn't we?
No. The amount of water in the water containment part of a toilet is not based upon the amount of water in a reservoir, because each time you flush, it's going to go clear back up, unless there is some reason that you don't have enough water pressure. And you might check with the valve at the bottom, one that you can manually turn. If it's not fully on, then you might not be getting the water up there, or you may have a defect with the valve itself, that the floater. So that's what I would check. It does not mean that you have a drought. Let's say hello to Chris from Queens. Hi, Chris. Your turn.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I wanted to quickly address what you were talking about earlier about the reporting on the journalists being shills.
Yes.
I'm actually very disappointed in you at the fact that you don't appreciate that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are on the front page of the Post today because they've gotten married, but it doesn't matter. The reporting, you know, we're almost going to war with Russia here, and the reporting is so lopsided. And it actually surprises me because I don't understand that. I mean, I don't really expect much from the American media at all anymore. I mean, I think that there are very few. But the reporting is, you're absolutely right, it's the same feed. I mean, even a few years ago, several years ago, even in the foreign press, you would turn to them and, you know, you would hear a little bit of a different take on it. Now, if you turn to the BBC, depending on whom you're listening to at a particular time of the day, they tend to be still a little bit, they used to be much better at it, but you still get a little bit more of a twist, or even when they're interviewing someone, you'll get more of a, you know, more of a substantive interview. But everything else is pre-written for everyone, even in alternative media. Most of the alternative media, if you look at it, I mean, even though they're taking an opposing position, it's completely contrived. They're always reading. I mean, I understand they have a lot to say, but it's really pathetic. And what is even more impressive to me is that if one is listening just a little bit, if you're interested, you know, they don't really cover what they do anymore. Even in terms of the governmental decisions, it's not really secret. It's put out there, in a way to just confuse most of the people, because I think they have such disrespect to the intelligence.
Well, I would agree with that. Let me give you an example of how biased the American media is. And they didn't do this without getting some input from the White House. They follow the talking points of the White House. Last week, Russia took 280 vehicles with only medical and food supplies, humanitarian supplies, into the part of the Ukraine that was being bombarded, where people had no water, they had no food, and there were a lot of casualties. Those trucks were examined by Ukrainian guards and the Red Cross. Every single truck, every single parcel in there. There were no weapons, no armaments at all. And yet we kept making a big deal about Ukraine didn't want this, but the Ukraine was starving its own citizens. The fact that those citizens had a long relationship with Russia, and a lot of them were pro-Russian, is beside the point. Ukraine is acting as if you are at all pro-Russia, or if you would like your area to be a part of Russia, even though Russia says we're not going any further, that's beside the point. Then I expect that those people would just die. You have not seen the American media go in there and show the casualties, the homes destroyed, the roads destroyed, the bridges destroyed, or people starving because they have no one in Ukraine helping them. And to the contrary, Ukrainian government, the Air Force is bombing areas. You don't see that. So no matter what I hear when it comes to the Ukraine and Russia and the conflict, it's the neocons. Why? Because they want Ukraine in the European Union. Why? Because the European Union wants its resources. It's got the richest soil in the world. It was considered the breadbasket of Europe, or that part of the Europe, Eastern Europe, for decades. If so, one group wants its coal, another group wants its agriculture, and they also, NATO wants to put all of the NATO alliance forces near Russia to spy on it, and also to have a nuclear presence there, or not a nuclear presence, but an armament presence. None of that is discussed in the media. None of it. So you're right. We have nothing but nonsense out of our media. I don't trust them. Okay? Thank you very much for your call. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Yeah, I had to share this with you. I was sitting here with one of my patients. His name is John, and he happens to be an expert on Asian history. And he heard your show the other day on the piece on Nanking and what happened in Nanking. And he said he's been listening to you for over 20 years, and he said to me, I was floored that every bit of scholarship was right on the money. It's just, you know, it's nice to hear that from people. He says what blew me away was, like, is he sitting there on Google, or does he remember these? Is this, like, right off the top of his head? I said, I was sitting in the studio. He knows this stuff. He knows his scholarship. So very impressed by a person who happens to be an expert in Asian history. And also I had we have a woman who also said that no one has integrity like you do when it comes to your audience and when it comes to reporting the truth. And she says, I'll always look to you to see if there's something that is true or not. And it's because you have the kind of scholarship that you have. People may agree or disagree with you, but when it comes to scholarship, I don't know anyone that comes close to having the information that's the truth and not anything that has spin on it to influence people. So people, thank you for that. I think it's great.
I appreciate those comments.
I have one quick thing, and I know I really didn't want to have to bring this up, but so many people in your audience are emailing me about it. This ALS challenge with the ice water, people are saying, you know, it's a brilliant marketing idea. Unfortunately, all of this money that's being made for ALS is going to go into drugs with horrific side effects. And some people are coming up with solutions, like, what if we did something like this for some things in alternative medicine, or to get people healthy instead of zeroing in on just ALS? And of course, other people are saying, are there other things for ALS that we could do, you know, more naturally, that's not going to require the FDA to pour billions of dollars into creating more synthetic drugs for people?
First of all, I'm totally opposed. I think it's foolish for people to get in, and most of them are getting it not because they care about ALS or know anything about Lou Gehrig's disease, but rather because it shows that they're a human being. And pouring cold water on yourself does not change anything, nor writing a check to one of the pharmaceutical-based research organizations. What should happen is that we should have an in-depth analysis of what has happened over the last 50 years in ALS research, nothing, and what could be done, and we do have a lot of knowledge of how to impact a body with ALS from the natural pharmacopoeia. We're out of time, but I will continue this dialogue on ALS, and we'll probably have an ALS and multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's health support group sometime in the winter. We're full for this for the fall with diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, and high blood sugar. But we'll take that on and see how much a lifestyle modification can mean. We're out of time. Let's say hello now to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. Happy Labor Day to you. Today it's, of course, Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and listeners have their say.
Great. Right now, Utrice Lead.